I didn't say I didn't like them.
All right, good.
I quietly really like them. I just don't want to use them to drink stuff out of. Not because it would taint the drink. Not because it would beverage taint me. Just because I don't want to ruin the glasses.
You eat like yogurt out of them, like a parfait?
No. Nothing sweet needs to come out of those glasses. Buttermilk, maybe.
There's a way that nothing sweet needs to come out of those glasses. That's because those glasses are sweet.
The sweet is never as sweet without the sour.
Speaking of sour, Batman Gotham Knight. Welcome to part two of CTR, Certified Episode of Recall, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about DC Universe movies.
That's Andrew Van. I was afraid you weren't.
I am Andrew Van with my co-host.
Jay to the Mizzle. Jason Martin, Bowling Green, Kentucky, enjoying another wonderful mug of pumpkin spice coffee. This is the shiznit, ladies and gentlemen.
Ugh.
You don't like pumpkin?
No, every time I think of pumpkin drinks, I keep thinking about that line from How I Met Your Mother where chick from Firefly was on there as Crazy Eyes.
Right.
And was a marshal like picking her up at the coffee shop, and he's like, he makes that pumpkin joke. He's like, so how do they get a whole pumpkin in there? What do you have, like a magical shrink ray back there? Like trying to flirt with her. He's like, phone number.
So how about Slutty Pumpkin Returns? And
that was like the worst thing ever?
Worse for the show or just worse for Ted?
Both?
I didn't think it was that great an episode, really.
No.
It's the worst one of this year.
I enjoyed, really, though, the Vanessa one. Victoria, I'm sorry. Victoria.
Oh, that was a great one. Yeah, that was a great one. With a good ending with the bus scene was awesome.
It made so much sense. And finally, they're getting to that point of, like, one, him maturing past a certain relationship. Two, that they're bringing back these moments in the show that mean so much. Like, the Slutty Pumpkin. That. Victoria. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing. And, again, don't mind Cal Penn so much.
Nah, it's working out. I think the show has come to grips with the fact that there is a lifespan on it. And they can't, because they're more adults at this point, they can't do quite as ridiculous of stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. Because it would just be completely non-believable and it would break the timeline. So we're getting a little bit more serious stuff with whether it's the pregnancy and some of that kind of stuff. And Barney's going to be going through more and more emotional stuff. And then Robin, of course, ties into that somewhat. And then Ted is still... It does seem like Ted has become more of a loser this year. Like, since the Zoe thing, all of a sudden he looks like he's completely just out of gas more than anything else, which, of course, he's going to – what do you think? He meets the mother end of this year? Or do you think they'll wait again?
Well, the end of this year is the wedding, right,
for Barney? She's supposed to be there, right?
Yeah, that's where they meet. So it has to be, you would think. It has to be, unless it's like one of those – footage shots where it's like the back of her head kind of thing, and then they pan to his face and he's like got that like swoon look on him, like right. He's melting, and it's like, and that kid's, and then they cut to like the next season. I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch,
which would be fine. I think that the one thing I'm looking most forward to seeing resolved is where the Umbrella plays in.
What I want to see is if they actually tie in everything they've been saying about the mother. Like,
right.
The fact that she was in
the class.
His class. That she was
the
Rachel
Umbrella
Bilson.
Is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Umbrella, the Rachel Bilson's roommate.
Right.
Digging, like, what is it, the yellow bus thing, the artist thing, being a bass player. There's so many things that they've said about it. I'm just like, I wonder if they're going to do it right. I wonder.
I think they do a good job most of the time in intertwining and bringing stuff back, but they have definitely painted themselves into a corner. Mm-hmm. Like, they have hopefully knew where they were going, because they have certainly set up a lot of things that she's going to have to live up to. Although, we may just get a montage of here's where she was here, here's where she was here, and that's how I met your mother. Now go get something to eat. Go eat dinner, and then that's the end of the series.
I could totally see that, and that would work with me. Some kind of like thing where like maybe there were like little clues the whole time you were watching, and
that'd
then just make
that'd be great.
Makes it's like one of those things like, were you paying attention?
It'd be like Usual Suspects or Vanilla Sky or that kind of ending, Sixth Sense.
It would because it's one of those. Have you been paying attention? Because like that would be really true, like a father's story, like to see like, have you paid attention? You would have seen this the whole time, like, oh man, kind of thing.
Was Lily.
Oh man, Dad just messed with him. He smoked a joint. Oh, I'm sorry. Ate a sandwich.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can totally see that. But speaking of Right Direction and not being backed in the corner,
Lauren
the
Montgomery.
Office. No, The Office. I've liked what they did this season so far. I really have.
Yeah, I think we've discussed that off cast, if you will, several times. And 95% of what I've seen, I've really enjoyed this year.
I love Robert California on the show.
I do too, because he's, well, he's Charles Minor, but he's funny.
Yeah.
But he can also be so cruel and direct when he talks to you, and then he just turns around and walks out. Like, he doesn't give a damn what you have to say.
But as a manager, he does, like, his job.
Mm-hmm.
He puts those life lessons somewhere in there. Like, when he, what is it, the whole, like, making everyone compete against each other kind of thing, losers versus winners.
Yeah.
He's like, some of you need to think you're winners.
Right.
Some of you need to think you're losers. For spite? I don't know. Whatever gets the job done. And then the one with the competition, Andy got the Nard Dog tattoo, and then the Halloween episode was funny as shit, where he just was picking up on everyone's, like, weaknesses and, like, greatest fears.
Yeah. Like, in a row, walking around the office, just destroying people, basically.
And using it as one long, scary story to fuck with everybody, and then walked out, look at the camera, like, eh?
He was like, yeah, bitches swoon. I think the coolest, one of the funniest things I've seen so far is Stanley rolling out, closing time. I hate that song, but now, that's my favorite song. Stick it up your butt.
Oh, that's a terrible thing. I hate that.
I don't know. It has been good, though. The Pam's second pregnancy thing is kind of weird, but to me, the show came back out of the gate a lot stronger than I thought it would after Carell, because I didn't like how last season ended. We talked about that on this podcast in the past, but and then when Spader was named, we were both really kind of crazed about it, and like, I don't think this is going to work at all. But we didn't know that Ed Helms was actually going to be regional manager.
Right, which makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it does. And he's done an exceptional job of that. It's kind of weird with him and Aaron, but Gabe is funny.
Why is Gabe still on the show,
though? It's just funny that they're still trying to put him together with some random character like people care. Like, Gabe is completely useless, in my opinion.
He's completely useless, and he's creepy. Oh, by the way, what happened to the hot intern girl? Like, she just disappeared.
Yep, she has. Why couldn't she stay and Gabe disappear?
Yeah, pretty much. She's like the Warner Brothers Studios executive, like, president's daughter, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
Something like that. Something ridiculous. Anyway, topic at hand, we were talking about the DC Universe movies. Last we ended, previously on Lost, we were talking about Batman Gotham Knight. And then I went to take a shit, because that's what I thought about that movie.
That's Aziz Ansari. He's like, you know what? That film really wasn't my cup of tea, probably because I don't like pieces of shit in my tea.
What do you think is the greatest villain of all time? That movie or the Team Iceland from Mighty Ducks 2?
This is awesome. Like, we'll be the strangest Disney villain that a child could think he's possessed by. Scar, the evil lion from the Lion King movies. And no, it's actually Team Iceland from the Mighty Ducks 2.
With the slick back hair and everything.
No, I would still take Gotham Knight.
But
Gotham
Wonder
Knight
Woman,
wins in a walk. Wonder Woman,
Wonder
awesome.
Woman redeems it. It came out March 3rd, 2009. Wonderful cast, man. You had Kerry Russell's Wonder Woman. Nathan Fillion makes his DC Universe debut as Steve Pilot. No, Steve Trevor. That's right. Steve Trevor. Something. But, I mean, it's gritty. It is dark.
That's why it was so good.
Uh-huh. It is just all kinds of, like, gore. I mean, it's like watching 300 animated with Wonder Woman as your main hero.
The thing about it was there was less fanfare to me going into it. It just kind of came out, and I saw it on the shelves. And then when I finally got a chance to watch it, I'm like, damn. Because that film is not for kids at all. And it does a really good job of kind of informing you as to why Wonder Woman matters.
Which is great, because it's kind of like why when Thor came out this past year, I was thinking to myself, they really need to show why Thor matters in the universe and what he is, not just some joke and like this ass with like a cape and a big like helmet or a hammer. Because that's what people think. They're like, pages. What's the guy with the hammer? No, Thor's like one of the most powerful people period ever to hit like comic pages. And Wonder Woman, same thing. She has an iconic role to not only like just comics, but like to women, to girls, just in general. But then like she gets so deluded because, you know, I don't want to sound sexist about him, but yeah, she's a woman.
Right.
You don't grasp that right away. But man, that movie, I think, did so much justice. Shows how much of a badass she is, how much of a warrior that she truly is, that she just eats shit for breakfast and spits it out.
Okay.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? Kara Russell did a really good job in the role. I think this is the first time they got voice acting for these movies right, with Kara Russell, Nathan Fillion, Alfred Molina, Rosario Dawson, Marge Helgenberger. Mm. I'm sorry. Big rant goes out to Oliver Platt, too.
Oliver Platt.
Come on, he's the king.
I like Oliver Platt. I'm not. Yeah, I know.
He will crown you.
He's also in Lake Placid.
Virginia. Virginia Madsen. Come on, John DiMaggio again. That man just does not stay away from
that movie. That movie was, the plot was better. The pacing was better. The animation was pretty crisp.
Mm-hmm.
It was Lauren Montgomery's directorial debut for DC Universe. It was just a well-crafted piece of... It was the first one that they could have potentially released in theaters, and it would have been received positively. It was just good. If you haven't seen it and you're a DC fan, you should definitely watch that.
Yeah,
you should absolutely watch that.
Worth the time and everything. It's so much action in that movie, too. It's really surprising. So,
especially after Doomsday.
Will you stop it?
Remember, it was awesome, man. It had like a silver cover with the S logo in the center. I'm like, this is going to be so badass. And no, you just take bad off. It was just ass.
Shut up. I hate you.
You were so excited for that movie. For weeks. You're like, Doomsday's coming out. Doomsday's coming out. Next day, I talk to you after it comes out. What'd you think of Doomsday? Man, I wanted to punch somebody after I saw that movie.
I did. That movie is so garbage. And listen to part one if you don't know what the hell we're talking about, because I pretty much use a lot of language.
All right, so Wonder Woman, what was after that gem? If it's not the best, it's one of the top two or three of all of these by far.
I say to me, that's my number two. Unfortunately, this movie flopped for me, and I was really excited about it, and so were you. One, because I hate the animation style, because it's more anime-ish, which I don't like
this
anime.
This is when that shit happened.
I do not like anime. There's not, but Chris Milani in his debut with Lauren Montgomery's second DC Universe debut, Green Lantern First Flight.
God, I was so jacked for this, as you know, and so were you. I actually went out and bought the one that came with the little figure.
I do too.
I still have it, and I've only watched it once. And here's the thing. It was slow as shit. It was just boring.
It was slow as shit, but then just...
It was boring, and it was not really faithful.
But it was boring, but then at the same time, there was no... In the middle of it, when he got the ring, it just jumped to him using it on his own.
Right.
And then,
no tricking and none of that.
Yeah, which, by the way, the Green Lantern live-action movie, that can go eat it.
Yeah, we're not talking about that movie.
Because that movie didn't make sense when, like, he got the ring, then he gave up after 5 minutes of training with Sinestro and Kilowog.
Yeah, because it's time to brood.
Yeah, and then he leaves. But then here's the thing, it's like, if he just quit the core, why the hell did he keep the ring? And two, why did they let him keep the ring?
So I thought we were watching Hal Jordan, not Edward Cullen.
Like, wouldn't they let him, like, wouldn't they just, like, take the ring back? Like, if you're going to be a pussy, then we're just going to take the ring back. Bob, this podcast is explicit.
Kilowog anyway, would have killed him.
You mean Michael Clark Duncan?
I'd choose to just call him Kilowog.
I'm just going to call him Kilowog in general. How's that? We're just going to even call him Mark Clark Duncan, just like it's Kilowog.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Milani was good voice acting from him. I like him a lot from Law and Order SVU. Victor Garber was great as Sinestro. It was a perfect fitting voice.
Yeah, he was.
Everything else in that movie was just awful. It was just so slow, so boring. Story was just lacking a lot of things. And the end was awful. Where he like became the battery or something. He like absorbed the entire battery with this green flame.
That film's better than Doomsday.
Yeah, no. Every film we talked about, except for maybe Gotham Knight.
Where would you put it in relation to Justice League? Because it's kind of the same.
Justice League New Frontier?
Yeah, the first one.
I'd rather watch this than New Frontier. New Frontier is boring from the get-go. I can kind of get sucked into this one because of the Green Lantern self-involvement. But, yeah, no. This is a whole thing. John Larroquette's in it.
Yeah.
As Tomo Ray?
It was just disappointing. I think that's the word.
It is very disappointing. They could have done so much better and just there's nothing. I don't know. I couldn't. I won't watch it again. I've seen it only one time. I had it on my DVD shelf. I won't watch it again. I guess from the beginning, because again, like the minute I saw the suit on, I was like, oh, I hated the suit, because again, it's the anime style, which I don't hate all anime. I mean, one of my favorite movies growing up is the Transformers the Transformers 1986 anime movie, Unicron.
Damn right.
That was so nice looking, because when you watch like the original Transformers, it looks like trash compared to that movie, man.
Yep.
But that movie is so good, 80s soundtrack and all. It's like one of the, just like my
you
like.
You got the touch.
Yeah, don't you butcher Stan Bush for me? Stop it. Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. That's all I really have to say about this movie, because I want to spend more time talking about the next one, which I have so much passion for.
Is that Public Enemies?
Yep. So if you want to wrap up on First Flight, go ahead.
No, there's not really anything to wrap up. I want to disagree with you for the sake of entertainment, but I can't. I was really disappointed in that, and I was at that point. I definitely like at that point. I had become such a big Green Lantern fan. I always quietly kind of liked it, but hadn't really gotten into it. At that point, I'd been reading all the comics and caught up, and was so enthused about it. And it came out, and it was really the only thing we had. Speaking of which, it's on topic, but it's sort of relevant. This coming Friday is the premiere of the Green Lantern animated series on Cartoon Network. It starts with an hour long episode that starts at 9 o'clock. It's getting really good, solid, positive press from all that I've seen, so I am looking forward to seeing that.
Who are the voices?
I can't recall, as a matter of fact. I'm excited to see what they've got. I had seen some of like how the animation looked, and for once it doesn't look like anime. And I'm kind of excited about it, and hopefully it will live up, and hopefully it will not be Wolverine anime.
It's a cast I'm not really familiar with at all, so...
Probably a good
except
thing.
For Kevin Michael Richardson. What up? He's still alive, kicking. Love it. Not a big thing.
So yeah, Public Enemies, which you had implored me to read, and I finally got around to that about a year ago, but it was solid. It really was solid, and... certainly a step up from First Flight.
The book itself is so good, because it revolves around the relationship / differences of Batman and Superman's styles. I mean, Batman being dark, Superman being light, Superman being applauded by the public, Batman being feared and revered by the public. It's just so cool, because the inner monologues between their heads is so fun, because they think alike, but they go about it in different directions of accomplishing what they need to be done. It's so cool.
It's like looking at a symmetrical, like, cross. Like, if you picture an X in your head, you look at the right side, the openness is Superman, the left side is Batman, and there's so many differences, and then in the text you have, like, blue writing for Batman, or, like, a blue thought bubble for Batman, and then you have, like, a yellow thought bubble for Superman or whatever, and they're so different, and then by the end of it you realize that they're basically saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That they approach it a different way, and then they kind of come to the realization that, oh, actually, we are the same people. It was just our life experience defined who we were and how we emote and all that kind of stuff. They're completely different people, but they're exactly the same. It's almost kind of like Batman and the Joker at times have been portrayed.
It's a really good story because, one, basically Lex Luthor becomes president, and... Right. He says that there's a big kryptonite asteroid, and basically blames Superman for the impending doom of the Earth, and basically somehow declares a $1 billion bounty on Superman himself for causing this this like inevitable doomsday, Armageddon. Let's use Armageddon to Earth, and basically also says that his partner in crime also has a bounty on him, aka Batman. So basically, every superhero and supervillain pretty much turn against Superman and Batman because of this. Because they blame Superman for some things, too. And then it's like a big manhunt out both of them. So basically, the two of them have almost no choice but to help each other out and survive. And the big thing about the movie itself is, as good as the story was, it was a big thing that Clancy Brown, Kevin Conroy, and Tim Daly all reunited for the first time since their respective series ended with Justice League and Superman animated series back, in the 2000 whatever. But, it's good to know Tim Daly's still alive and kicking.
Joe Hackett.
That's right. right.
And the TV movie Kim Conway off.
Forever will be the best Batman voice.
Yeah, that's never going to change.
What was that story you told me one time you read on like a forum about some jackass talking about the Arkham City, Arkham Silent game?
Yeah, it was on Giant Bomb, actually. I was reading a forum talking about Arkham City, and you're like, ah, voice acting. It was actually about Arkham Asylum, yeah. Voice acting so bad. This guy's got to be the worst Batman voice actor I've ever heard. And he got skewered for like 15 pages worth of comments where people were like, yeah, you should probably just never speak again and never touch that game or never watch any comics, never play video games, never breathe again, basically.
That guy needs to be Allison more than Steve Bartman. Hey, Steve Bartman, you know, that's a shame story, by the way, if you ever get to watch that special. That was a great story.
Documentary. And
it was.
I look forward to the day that he actually publicly is able to come out and maybe at some point try to do an interview. I'd really like to hear from him because I always believed that that was total trash by Chicago.
That is just awful. I mean, it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, baseball cities ever. And here's the thing. You can't tell me 99% of other people wouldn't have done the exact same thing he did.
Well, you see 20 people around him trying to. It just happened to be him that actually got his hand out there. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it became such a problem is because Moyes is a loser, arrogant ass, throws down his glove, mm-hmm. and starts screaming up in the stands or whatever. It's like, dude, come on. Right. I mean, stuff happens and it was bad, and then they're trying to blame that was the end, and that's why they lost like a 6-run lead and then completely got destroyed in the 7th game.
Yeah, sorry. This one guy ruined your whole franchise, your 100-some-odd-plus-year curse. But, again, it's not like 99% of people would have done the same thing, too. This man's life was destroyed.
Yeah, he almost had to move, death threats.
He had to go in hiding.
Because he went
for
death
threats.
You know, in a NLCS game for the Chicago Cubs. Yeah, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't say that Kevin Conroy is not the greatest Batman voice ever. And if you say he's the worst, then that's because you have no idea what you're talking about.
And it's one of those things I hate about comic book fans, or just a lot of fans in general, who want to be smart. So they say whatever they think is clever right away to impress either a girl or to be in a conversation or sound like that guy.
You know what? I don't think you're impressing too many girls by talking about Kevin Conroy.
No. Here's the thing. Okay, give me an example. When I saw Batman Begins about 6 years ago with my friend, my coworker, this kid right away, as the movie was, the credits rolling, people were clapping, excited, and all that stuff.
With me.
He goes, no, I was with the girl.
With me and Tyler and Adam?
No.
And all that?
Oh, no. You guys came in separately, but I sat with my friend at the time, and we sat up front. You guys were also like a couple seats behind.
Was that Naomi or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Shout out to her. She's cool. Anyway, so we were hanging out, watching this movie, and then like right away as the credits were rolling, this kid behind me, who's like maybe a few younger than me, but just wanted to be smart and go, whatever, I think the first one was better. Okay, first off, everyone is entitled to their own opinion. I know a good friend of mine, Ian Roberts, he loves the Green Lantern live-action movie. Okay, power to you, you're entitled to your opinion, but he thinks that movie was better than Dark Knight. We'll get to that subject in a second later. So again, let me say, everyone is entitled to your opinion. That is your right, that is your whatever, okay?
You're an American.
Boy, what the fuck, man? Batman with Bob Keaton was not better than Batman Begins.
If you go back and watch it, every time I see it now, it doesn't hold up.
Right? That's why I was trying to tell you, man. I was like, there's something wrong with watching that first Batman because Bruce Wayne doesn't sit around like a fucking maniac and hang from his legs like he's a bat, okay? Second, Bruce Wayne does not have the Michael Keaton fro. Okay? Just no. And the city looked garbage. It looked like it looked Tim Burton-y. It took me away from the fact that I'm supposed to be watching a Batman movie. It is Tim Burton's style.
You're waiting for Jack Skellington to pop out around Gotham Tower?
Or a big-ass peach or something. It killed me watching that movie. Even growing up, I mean, I just could not watch it over and over. And that kid was just like, I think the first one was better. Fuck you! This podcast is explicit.
You mean the
fuck?
1966?
No!
Stop. God, I love that movie.
No, you stop. Don't you dare bring up the shark repellent.
Dude, you had shark repellent bat spray, baby. You had four villains in that film. You had Joker, Penguin with Burgess Meredith. God rest his soul. Cesar Romero, the Joker, God rest his soul. Frank Gorshin, who's still alive, and Lee Merriweather playing Catwoman. God, that film was awesome.
You stop it.
Remember they turned the entire UN into different colored dust?
No! I don't remember that. Stop it. Oh, I hate you. Why do you know this?
Because I have watched that movie at least 200 times. For at least a year, I watched it every day when I was growing up.
But you know what, though? Here's the thing. I hate people like that. Just don't speak. Don't speak. That's all I gotta say. Don't ruin shit like that because you want to sound clever or you want to sound smart.
Because the problem is, if you don't know what you're talking about, you sound like a fucking idiot.
Shut the fuck up. Bite your tongue, go home, and masturbate because you didn't get a chick with you.
Whoa.
Just saying. Because you sound like a moron. Don't do that. Don't ruin my day. Don't ruin my movie. Like, I don't want to go see the Avengers and some jackass behind me going to be like,
it's okay. One's made of skin, one's made of wood. Who's the dummy?
Not me. But fuck that. And do you see where I'm coming from, though? I hate people who want to sound smart but have nothing to back it up.
Well, it's the idea of bucking the trends. I'm not conforming to your Dark Knight's the best. I'm conforming to Legion.
Or people who just want to, like, what is his name? Spencer from The Hills or whatever, Nighty Montag.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a clip years ago. I don't know why, but I happened to just see it. And thank God, because I can talk about it. They were sitting in a, like, club somewhere, and it was the year that Dark Knight came out. And he's sitting there trying to be all cool and smooth in the club. And he's like, yeah, did you guys see Batman? Oh, yeah. You know what they should have called it? They should have called it Joker.
Yeah.
Like, as if that was the most clever thing ever. Like, as if he had made that movie, and he was like, they should have called it Joker.
Yet another show featuring a bunch of dopes who are famous simply because they're famous.
For nothing.
Exactly. All right, so, little off topic there, but Public Enemies
was good. It was really, one, is a good story. Two, it was really true, except for the end. The very end was not the same as the book, but it's a good book. It shows a lot of the things that you love about both characters and how they mesh, how they get along. And just, like, the cameos in it are so good with, like, everybody from Black Lightning with LeVar Burton. To Allison Mack as Power Girl from Smallville.
I told you to get a picture. You can't disappoint a picture.
I hate you.
You mentioned LeVar Burton. I go straight to Troy Barnes.
Yeah, I know. Just take a look. It's in a book.
Dreaming rainbow.
What was it? He appeared in Big Bang last year. I forgot what he did. He came as himself.
Yeah, he was the Georgie LaForge action figure.
Mm-hmm. Wait, was that or was, no? It was
No, I got that mixed up with Will Wheaton when he became not his enemy anymore.
Yeah, Data.
A couple weeks ago, yeah, Data. That was
Brett
awesome.
Spine. He's like, ooh, check it out. Oh no! What was it? It was LeVar Burton showed us himself at the very end because I think he got a tweet.
He was invited to a party.
Yeah, and I forgot what the hell it was that he walked in on. He's like, okay.
Well, that's the last time I. He's like, that's the last time I make plans based on Twitter.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of Twitter, I've been meaning to talk about this. I have to give huge shout-outs to your boy, Kevin Durant.
I love Kevin Durant, as you know.
Stories like these don't ever get told enough. They really don't, because we get so many negative stories about sports.
You talking about the football thing?
Yes.
That's awesome, man.
Okay, for those who don't know, Kevin, the NBA is on strike. What is it now? The first week of November, and we still have no basketball. Most likely, we won't get any basketball this season because of the strike going on right now. Similar to what the NBA has done in the MLB. Every major sport goes through these little tenures. But right now, there is no NBA. Players, it's even worse than the NFL, if I'm
not
mistaken.
Much worse. Much, much, much worse.
They cannot even get into like a meeting without trying to kill each other. The owners,
it's all over about 2 percentage points in revenue either way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad, and as a diehard NBA fan, it is driving me nuts. They've already canceled all games through the end of this month. If they don't find a deal in the next week and a half, they're saying the season's probably lost, and that is a disaster for the NBA, who just saw a real resurging in terms of its popularity last season because of the evil triumvirate in Miami.
This is gonna. Do you think this is gonna be as hurtful as the baseball strike in 1994 or the hockey strike in in the early 2000s?
Nothing's probably going to ever, in my opinion, be worse than the hockey strike. Because hockey mattered, and it hasn't since.
Yeah.
I mean, I still love it because I'm a Penguins fan, but I like all sports to an obscene degree. Most people don't care a lick about hockey anymore. And at the time, there were marketable stars. It was on ESPN. They had Gary Thorne and Bill Clement, National Hockey Night with John Saunders. And everybody watched it. Then when they come back from the lockout, all of a sudden it's on Fox on Sunday afternoons with a lit-up puck. And then it's now relegated to Versus and NBC on Sunday afternoons, competing against football and or the NBA. So it's I don't think it's going to be that bad. If they miss an entire season, the problem that they have is the NFL people care. NBA, if you're not a really big NBA fan, you're not going to notice.
Nope.
And that's bad because the NBA needs to market these stars. Plus, Kobe is getting older.
Plus, it's one more year where I can't make fun of LeBron not getting a ring again.
Well, you can still make fun of last year.
That is true. But anyway, back to the topic. Yes, not topic, but the story. But basically, Kevin Durant is one of these many NBA stars who is sitting around bored out of their minds. I mean, LeBron James tweeted about how he beat Batman Arkham City the other day and damn, gave mad props to the credits to everyone developing the game.
Damn, he beat it and I haven't.
Yeah, I know, right? Suck that. But Kevin Durant, star of the Oklahoma City Thunder,
woo-hoo,
sitting around and tweeted literally just as himself, just like, anybody got anything to do? I'm bored as hell.
Actually, he was like, man, I'm bored. Anybody got like pick up all going on?
So basically, he got called out. This kid and his frat brothers basically just they tweeted him directly, and they're like, hey, yo, we got one going on. It was like 40 minutes away from where he was staying.
Yeah, it was Oklahoma State,
mm-hmm,
University's campus. So he goes on this fraternity or whatever, plays quarterback, throws four touchdowns and picks off three passes playing both ways. Probably not too hard to intercept if you're Kevin Durant in a frat flag football league.
But what was great was the story. It was, I think I heard on Scott Van Pelt show or Ryan Silla. They were saying that they went back and forth because he tweeted, is there a pickup game anywhere? Kids said, yeah. Then they private messaged each other's like contact information. He gave them directions. And finally, like, did like a public tweet of the kid called out Durant going, can you catch? And then he goes back, can you throw?
Like, Kevin Durant ended up throwing.
And then there was like 600 people that showed up for this.
And he signed every autograph. And they got disqualified because he wasn't a student. And they didn't care. And it was great publicity. And he's like the most selfless athlete in the world. He's played in like 10 charity games this summer. He's playing in front of like, you know, he's playing at Rucker Park, the most historic basketball venue in the country, for no reason other than just to play and show off and have fun. He has been the king of this lockout. He's shown even more why he is so valuable to the NBA off the court, because he just doesn't do anything wrong. It's so easy for me to be just such a enormous diehard Thunder fan when there's somebody like Kevin Durant there.
There's a lot of stories I keep hearing since that, too. Like, yeah, that's just like him. He's down to earth. He's
right.
Humble. He's grateful for every single thing in his life. He knows how to treat his fans. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't treat them like trash. He doesn't, you know, charge them for autographs if he catches them in public. I mean, just whatever. He's just a real guy.
Right.
Those stories we don't get enough of. And that's a shame.
No,
it
because
really
we're too busy hearing about something I don't want to talk about in Pennsylvania.
Chris Humphreys?
No. The scandal at Penn State.
Oh, well, we're not going to get into that.
No, that's one of the most awful things I've ever heard in my life.
I know, and you've seen Batman Gotham Knight. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't even want to. I can't.
That's how we
transition,
ladies and gentlemen, back to the topic.
But yeah, Public Enemies is good. Movie, you'll like it.
I would say Public Enemies is my third favorite of the whole series. Number one, we haven't gotten to yet. But right, the next one is Garbage.
Is it Apocalypse?
No, it's worse. Crisis. Again,
Crisis
anything with
Infinite.
Crisis is, yep, Crisis on Two Earths is what this one was called, based on Infinite, yeah. Based on Grant Morrison's 2000 comic, JLA Earth 2, or Crisis on Two Earths.
Just listening to that, you know it sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. It's got a cool opening concept. It basically has Lex Luthor from an alternate universe, who's a good guy, coming to ask and beg for help from the Justice League of our world to come save his world because the Justice League in the other universe are bad people. Dun, dun, dun.
Hell surprise.
And they have different alternate universe.
Yeah, you're stumbling through it because how do you describe?
It's so cheesy. It's so cheesy.
That's what's so worse about it is like you can barely understand reading issue after issue after issue of it. How on earth do you bring that into a 9 or a more like 80-minute animated film and have it make any semblance of actual sense whatsoever?
But let me think. You, instead of Superman, there's Ultraman. Instead of
the Ultraman, you know, from Japan.
Aw.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do know what you're talking about, unfortunately, because I am Asian. Thank you. God, I hate you.
About it from there. I was thinking about it, the Super Nintendo game that came out right when the system came out. Wasn't a launch title, but it came out like a month after.
But instead of Superman, it's Ultraman, and he looks more dark. He has a, you know, like 5 o'clock shadow. Instead of what is it? Instead of Wonder Woman, it's Superwoman. Instead of Batman, it's Owlman. First off, Batman was voiced by William Baldwin. Owlman, who is the equivalent of Batman,
this is it's a shark, isn't it?
was voiced by James Woods. What reality? What world is James Woods a superhero or his voice? It's so creepy.
There's only one good thing James Woods ever did in a comic or in a cartoon setting.
And?
That was The Simpsons when he played himself when he was trying to do the Quickie Mart.
Ooh, piece of candy.
Yeah.
Ooh, piece of candy. Ah.
James Woods as Owlman. Not to be confused with Patrick Wilson in Watchmen.
Nope. This was by far, definitely the worst voice cast I've ever heard, and it just the story is just unbelievably garbage. It's just the stereotypical we have dark versions of ourselves, and they fight. The winning survivors, you know, get to kill each other's universe or whatever. It's terrible. It is so terrible. I can't. You saw it.
Yes, I saw it.
And you're just like, really?
It's just so convoluted. And if your main plot point revolves around an overused video game cliche of fighting yourself,
yeah,
like some evil shadow version of you, you probably need to take it back to the drawing board. Because not only has it been done a million times, but I could probably count on one hand how many times it's actually been done well. And the voice cast, to me, it's almost like, yeah, we know this is shit anyway. Let's not really pay anybody that's worth a crap.
No.
But I would say it's... Is it better than Doomsday?
Yeah. Doomsday is bottom of the totem pole. No. Let me say this. Gotham Knights bottom of the totem pole, then it's Doomsday, then it's this.
Gotham Knights always the bottom. But like I said, it's completely different to me than all the rest of them anyway. But yeah, so you would put it third right above Doomsday?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least this one's entertaining because of how bad the voice acting is in the selection. This is going to be fun because this is one where you and me are going to go debate a little bit. Batman Under the Red Hood in 2000.
I liked it.
I did not. See, listeners, we don't always agree.
I liked I particularly liked the first 10 minutes of it because it was so dark to me with the Joker and the guy tied up.
The guy?
Yeah, I know. I know.
That guy. You know,
that dude.
not Marcellus Wiley. Okay, so the original story of the Red Hood and why it's the Red Hood. Okay, before the Joker became the Joker, he went by an alias known as the Red Hood. He just basically was a bank robber. That's all it really was. He wasn't like a huge villain in Batman's arsenal. Enemies. Then comes the stories of the Robins. First off, there's Dick Grayson, who everyone knows is more familiar with. And yes, he was, you know, people make fun of because, you know, it's Robin. He looks a little gay. I don't want to sound mean, but, you know, whatever. People joke about it. It's just the common thing. Well, he grows up, obviously becomes Nightwing, does his own thing in Bloodhaven, and, you know, goes from there. There's the second Robin that comes in after... Dick Grayson, known as Jason Todd. Now, this was a little different story. Dick Grayson was the boy wonder everyone loved, everyone knew about, and familiarized, and he was Batman's balance. Jason Todd not so much. Jason Todd was like the rebel because it was the '80s and '90s, and it was like grunge and like rebellion, you know, that kind of stuff. And adolescents, people, you know, teenagers rebellion. So he was a way different Robin. He talked back. He did his own thing. He never was really listening to Batman all the time, that kind of stuff. And pretty much so to the point where fans in the early 90s hated the Jason Todd Robin. I mean, hated. So much so that when the comics of this original story came out of Robin's impending death, fans got a chance to vote with a 1-800 number on the back. Or no, it was like 1-800 number on the back of the last comic before the impending death of Jason Todd, where you could call one of two numbers. One number you could call to vote for Jason Todd to die, or the other one to have him saved. Well, by the history of the books, people voted for Jason Todd to die. This is the first time where fans wanted a DC character to die because they hated him that much. So, story goes, is basically Jason Todd goes off on this excursion by himself, and he goes and finds his birth mother, who's an archaeologist, if I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And ergoes ensues, and he's captured by the Joker. Here's the funny thing. A lot of people don't know how serious and how messed up the Joker gets in a lot of these stories. The Killing Joke.
Killing Joke is...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just by far one of the darkest things you will ever read. The Joker book itself is crazy, too. But basically, Joker captures Jason Todd and his mother and beats the living shit out of Robin with a crowbar. Like, that is the most... One of the most, except for Barbara Gordon getting shot, is probably one of the most dramatic scenes in Batman, like, saga mythology. Is Joker taking a crowbar and beating a teenager to near pulp death. Like, and they show, like, the face all bruised up, broken bones, like, kicked around. I mean, he beats him to a bloody mess. And, oh, and there's the topper. Blows him up with the bomb. So that's how bad it was that people wanted this Robin to die because they didn't like him. And then so on and so on. Years pass. Another Robin comes up. Tim Drake, who is much better received and a much better character in general. Because
I think he's the best Robin.
I have to. Well, I mean, Dick is always going to be.
Nothing wrong with. Yeah, but I think Dick's awesome as Nightwing. But I like Tim Drake as Robin simply because of the whole like brain side of it.
He's more of the detective. He's more of like the classic Batman. Tim Drake comes into play when basically he's like a super fanboy of Batman. He's studied Batman for years. He has like this whole like room dedicated to finding Batman and basically like goes to like the crime scenes of the Batman's things for years and like even has like a couple like of his batarangs and does like the research and basically deduces that Batman is Bruce Wayne. And goes and finds him and like breaks into the Batcave and stuff like that. I mean, it's a really cool story. And basically, he inherits the Robin role and is just taken in by the family. And he's also, you know, he has his dark times too. But basically, okay, after years pass, and this is again sort of the reason why DC's kind of fucked up. Because again, they bring back Jason Todd somehow from the dead. And if I'm not mistaken, this Jason Todd was. It wasn't an alternate universe, even though it was speculated at first, but it was basically. Talia and Ra's al Ghul got the body, and Lazarus resurrected pit him.
Yep.
And ergo made him come back alive because they left him in the pit a long time, but also the pit makes you go a little nuts. So,
i.e. Zor-El R. Batman with the red and purple.
Yeah, a little bit. Hamburger? Oh, I'm sorry. Grimace?
Grimace, that's right.
But
Air McCheese?
Oh, you stop. Jason Todd comes back to life. He's crazy. He's an adult. His body's accelerated. And he comes back and starts stalking Batman and the Joker. And starts his own little like thing, his own little crime ring. And basically gets back at the Joker by beating him to a bloody pulp with like a crowbar. And messing with Batman by leaving little messages and clues. Saying that... You know, he could be back messing with him. And then it gets to a weird story where, like, it's really Clayface messing with him. But you do find out, in fact, that Jason Todd is back at some point. So the Red Hood storyline is basically about that. Like, the return of Jason Todd after all this whole shit of you know, between the Joker and the Robins, all this kind of, like, this whole, like, big storyline. So I liked it at first in the comics, but again, I kind of wish they had just left it alone. But it does lead to other things, like the whole battle for the cowl, which is way later, and stuff like that, and Redemption. But anyway, the movie sort of brings, it starts off similar, where it's the Joker beating Jason Todd to death.
Right.
Like you're talking about. It's super dark. It is messed up. It is just crazy. And then they blow him up, and then air the story. But anyway, you can take it from there, from why you like it.
I just liked it. I don't... Judd Winnick wrote the original Red Hood story. Judd Winnick from Real World 3 fame, if you didn't know. That would be the Pedro Puck year.
Oh, San Francisco?
Yeah, because Judd was writing an independent comic called Nuts and Bolts. And that story gets told on Real World about him trying to get his comic published and all this kind of stuff. He becomes great friends with Pedro. He's friends with him until he dies, actually, on Real World, which is why, and he became a huge advocate for gay rights as a result of Pedro Zamora, who, of course, now has passed on, and everything else that went on in that house. And that's why a lot of the stories he's written are about minorities or gay characters. He's done, like, gay storylines in Batman and all sorts of other stuff like this. But this is, like, one of the first things he did that I ever took note of was the Red Hood story. And, yeah, like you, I overall liked the source material, but I liked the animation more for some reason. I liked the fact that it was a darker tone, and I didn't hate the voices, and I know that makes you want to scream.
Yeah, I did not, again, the return of John DiMaggio. He didn't do a good Joker. It didn't sound right. It was too... Because I guess in my mind, I've been so used to, for a long time, and you did too, Mark Hamill. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, for those who didn't know, Mark Hamill did the voice of the Joker for many years in the Batman anime series. A, by far, hands down, the best voice acting job that fit the character so well.
I would say it's the best voice acting job I've ever heard a cartoon character do. I love his job. I love the way he talks. I love the laugh.
The laugh is iconic.
The laugh's iconic, and I love how they used to draw him on the animated series. The way they would have his eyes droop when he was trying to be funny, and he would talk like it's just like Mark Hamill was made to be that character. You would never know you're listening to Mark Hamill, which to me is a sign of somebody that has completely dominated it. It's great. It really is.
Jensen Ackles as Red Hood just did not click with me. Bruce Greenwood as Batman sounded too old. And I love Bruce Greenwood. I do. I loved him in the Star Trek movie. He was so good as Captain Pike. And I was sort of excited for Neil Patrick Harris' Nightwing, but then I kind of heard it, and there was just not a lot of energy behind it in me. Gary Cole, Commissioner Gordon, was okay. I couldn't get into it, and the storyline was just kind of dumb, because, I mean, from the very beginning, it's one of those things of there shouldn't be a mystery of who the Red Hood was. Like, the very beginning, you're like, oh, it's going to be Jason Todd.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of those movie cliche things. It's like, oh, it's got to be that guy from the beginning. You know, it's kind of like an old spy movie. It's like one of the main character dies of like the team, and he comes back, a la Mission Impossible 1.
Old spy movie.
Well, you know what I mean.
An old spy movie is like the Maltese Falcon or Flight of the Condor.
Were those like that, with like a character died in the beginning and came back as like a bad guy?
Not necessarily. Those were just real classic spy movies. What you're talking about, I mean, spy movie, that's a spy movie cliche.
Right, but you get the point.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
I mean, from the beginning, like, to me, the name of the film and the concept is you're supposed to guess kind of who the Red Hood is. But to me, if you didn't read the storyline, know the storyline, then you're going to go, oh, yeah, it's that guy. So what's the point? Why do I need – I don't know. There was no mystery involved.
I just liked it.
I
don't know what else. So do you rate it really low, or is it just kind of middle of the road?
Not really low at all. It's middle of the road to me, because – I like that storyline so much in the comics. I really, really did. I really wanted to give it a chance, man. I really just could not get into it. There was just a lot of things I was kind of messed up with it. And I think they just really missed a lot of things they could have hit. And again, it just I don't know. It's not nearly as bad, though, as the other stuff we'll get to. I mean, the next one is Superman Batman Apocalypse. That movie really didn't make sense because it was kind of – it wasn't that it was just boring. It was kind of scattered all across the place. However, it did bring back the wonderful voice of Ed Asner as Granny Goodness. So that wins.
That's the only one I haven't seen.
Really?
Because you told me that – you told me to pass unless I really had time.
Yeah, not watch it.
Right.
The storyline in this is it follows the comic okay of Superman Batman slash Apocalypse. Where basically it's a sequel to Public Enemies. It's the unveiling or what is it, the coming of Supergirl in the DC universe, at least to this storyline, made by Jeff Loeb and Michael Turner. It was actually one of Michael Turner's last comics before he unfortunately died. Michael Turner being the creator of Witchblade.
So not the Michael Turner that runs the Falcons?
No. Again, it was another big significant feature with Tim Daly, Conroy, and everyone coming back. And again, Ed Asner as Granny Goodness, which is really funny because Granny Goodness is a woman and it's got Ed Asner's voice because it's just a butch lady. And it's crazy. But basically, it's basically about Supergirl coming into town. And she's like Superman's this cousin from like the moon of Krypton, has similar powers. And she goes from being raised with Superman's family to being used by Darkseid as like a soldier to fight against Superman and Batman and everybody else. And it's just there's good moments where it's like Superman, you see like the inner hatred in that Superman never crosses the line of killing people. Never. Batman, for the most part, too. That's what makes them difference between a villain and a hero. They have boundaries. They have morals. They have that judgment in their brain.
No, there's that. There's also the fact that you can't kill villains off or you don't have anything to write on.
Right.
You eventually run out and you have to create – I mean, eventually there's not that many Clock Kings to go around. You have to find bad villains later on. Like,
really? Clock King?
Love the Clock King.
I was going to actually talk about the end of the Dark Knight and then you go bring that. You know, where basically the Joker, he could have died. Batman could have let him fall off that building.
And I still – that's the only thing about the Dark Knight I hate is what? That they killed Two-Face.
Oh, yeah, I know. Because I hate that in superhero movies in general, where they kill the villain. Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2, Venom in Spider-Man 3, and Harry in Spider-Man 3.
They just kill everybody in Spider-Man 3.
But they do that a lot of times with the villains, and it's annoying. Yeah. It's like, what the hell are they going to do now? But Dark Knight was really good, where basically the line from Heath Ledger's, his last line of that movie was so great. He goes, "I think you and me are destined." To like just that was such a great like line because it's true. They're one and the same, and they have to be with one another kind of thing.
Yeah.
Summer Glau comes in as Kara, Supergirl in the movie, which is okay. She's cute and adorable and all that jazz, and I have her autograph. What up? But again, I don't know. The midway through the movie just doesn't really make a lot of sense, and it's not a lot of consistency, and it just kind of drabs until the very end, because then, like, Doomsday comes out of nowhere and invades, like, the Kent farm, and it makes me think, wait a minute, did he kill Superman's parents? And, like, it doesn't really go, and they don't answer those questions. And then, it's cool to see Superman break and cross that line, because in the Justice League cartoon, there's, like, two or three times where, man, he hates Darkseid because Darkseid just doesn't give a shit. He in the DC comics he quote unquote killed Batman and then snapped. And in the Superman TV series he killed, I can't remember the guy's name, but one of the main detectives cops that worked with Superman a lot, like right in front of his eyes. And Superman basically like crossed that line and just beat his face into a bloody pulp while Darkseid was just laughing at him the whole time. And even before, like in the Superman cartoon, like Darkseid took over Superman's mind and brainwashed him and used him against the world. Hence why, like for a long time in that like world, like no one trusts Superman. And that's happened before in the comics too, where basically Superman can snap, and that's why Batman for those who don't know, he keeps like a he keeps several pieces of kryptonite in like weird ass places in case Superman ever has his mind taken over because it's happened before, or if he ever snaps or like that, because Superman is just unstable in a way. And it's funny, if you ever get to read Hush, Superman Batman, that's a great storyline. I know you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Superman gets taken over by Poison Ivy, and he's used against Batman. So he makes Superman chase him through the sewers of Metropolis, in which there's like a tunnel where Batman just built like a giant thing of nothing but kryptonite. I'm just like, really? Really? But yeah. Well, no, the movie's okay. I'm not going to go my way to watch it anytime soon.
Right.
Next one, however, you really like. I thought it was okay. I mean, but I see the point where, what is it, James Ditton plays Superman in All-Star Superman?
Well, I don't know if I'd say I really like it, because I had one lingering problem with it. I love that story.
Story.
Like, I love All-Star Superman.
It's great. It is.
And I thought that this was a good movie. However, there was a lot of downtime. And one of the problems that I had with the film was the voice actor of Superman was boring. Like, the way he delivered his lines was so unenthusiastic, and it was kind of, I'm Superman. And it puts you to sleep. Mm-hmm. That movie's just not exciting. It wasn't that it was bad. I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it. But, I mean, it was faithful for the most part to the source material. I just found the movie slower than I think it should have been. Mm-hmm. That was really my only problem with it.
Basically, the story of All-Star Superman is really good, where Superman goes and is he tricked by Lex Luthor or something like that? He goes in space and basically he gets too close to the sun and gets like radiation poisoning, because again, just to fill in, nerd alert, Superman is basically powered by the yellow sun. In Krypton, they have a red sun, which makes them normal, kind of like us to our yellow sun. But for Kryptonians, their alien race gets superpowered, hence his powers, by the yellow sun. He's like a big charging battery the entire time. When he gets weak, he basically just kind of rests and he absorbs the sun. Not like people who overtan in, you know, weird ass places or fucking fake bake. But anyway, no, he gets powered by the sun. So he gets too close, too long, absorbs too much, and basically ends up, you find out that he is dying from solar radiation. He's poisoned. And which Lex Luthor pretty much knew it and set him up for that. So when he gets the news and gets the diagnosis of he's going to die, he goes back and has one-on-one time with Lois and just reveals that he's Superman and basically wants to, I guess, go out on his terms.
Right.
Things he wants to do before he died. Yeah, tie up loose ends, be with her.
Right.
And then it's a really cool part of the story where basically he makes her a birthday gift. And
for a day, she can fly and
has his powers.
Right, and it's awesome.
It's a serum that like shows what it's like to be him, and like makes her a little suit, which is super sexy.
It is. And there's one great panel in the actual comic where they're both in the sky and they kiss.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really well drawn, and they do a pretty good job of that in the actual film too.
And it is a really, really good story. If for those people who don't like Superman, because, and this is the cliche that I hate about when people don't give something like this a chance, and they go, well, Superman, he's got too many powers, it's too easy, he's too strong. I'm like, well, here's the thing. That's the reason why I like Superman, because he's one of these guys that's like a normal guy in a sense where he puts so much, literally the weight of the world on his shoulders, because he's such the most powerful being in the DC universe. He takes on so much responsibility. So when something bad does go down, you feel it. You see it in the panels. You see it in his eyes, in his thoughts, and stuff like that. And it's one of these things where he's vulnerable. And this is what the story is so good about, because he's vulnerable, because he's going to die. I mean, that's the thing. There's no part in any of the story where it's like a sappy comic where, oh, he's going to die, but then they'll figure out a cure. No, right. He dies. Spoiler alert. I kept thinking that too when I'm reading the comics. I'm like, there's like a cure or something, right? They're gonna put on like a suit and he's gonna redone. No, he dies.
Yeah, my man's done.
Because basically he breaks down into energy.
Right.
And the energy is dissolved as he's kissing Lois for the last time, and that's a powerful scene in both the movie and in the comic, as he's like breaking down and he says I love you, and then like it's scattered and you see like the tears in her eyes. It is wonderfully done. Again, I will agree with you on the part that James didn't, I have no idea. Really, Tim Daly, what the fuck were you?
Yeah, exactly. That was the only thing.
Put the wing money down.
Yeah. Put the syndication money down. tell Steven Weber to go away for a minute. Like I said, I really like it a lot. I just wish that voice had been more enthusiastic, because it is at times coma-inducingly boring. It just gets really slow and quiet. There's times where there's really not even any music going on, and that story is so good. I also wanted to say real fast, I think it's a cop-out when people say, oh, he's got too many powers, because there's one thing people seem to overlook, and that is, because so much of his life takes place on Earth, my man is so lonely.
Yeah.
As Clark Kent, and because he can't obviously tell anybody who he is, there's so many times where he's alone. That's his power problem. Like, I mean, that's where so much of the drama and so much of the emotion and so much of the this is why Superman's good. You look at him and you're like, well, that guy's got it all. No, he really doesn't. At all. Not in our world. Like, he can save people and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, he can't ever really have true relationships with people on Earth, and I think that people fail to think about that when they think of this. But I like that. I liked All-Star Superman. I like the book better. The book's one of my all-time favorites. But, yeah.
And that's the thing, like, even you guys, because even before, like, you read that, you weren't a huge Superman person either.
I wasn't.
You
really
weren't.
Not because of the cheap reason, just because I had never read it.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Batman guy, and I realized it was going to take so long that I was just, I'm just not going to do this. But I've since changed my tune and really like it. But it was never like a cop-out. Oh, he's just too powerful and boring. No, it didn't have anything to do with that. But Superman's really misunderstood because people take it for granted that he's this all-powerful, perfect god, and that's absolutely not true.
There's a reason why I liked, and one of my favorite graphic novels is Kingdom Come, is he becomes so vulnerable again, and just like you said, he gets taken for granted, because it gets to the point where like our generation is so old and rely on so much that basically he just, in a sense, says, you know what, fuck this, I can't do this anymore, I can't be the quote-unquote savior for every damn thing, and just goes and like this he goes away for a long time,
right?
And she's unheard for like the next 40 years and just comes back. That's a whole other topic we can get into.
Well, I was going to make the point that that's what I'd like to see them do is Kingdom Come.
They need to do Kingdom Come.
I would love
all things, really. Been too long. Next one up, Green Lantern, Emerald Knights. This is my favorite. So Wonder Woman's 2, this is my number one favorite, because they finally, to me, do justice to Green Lantern and what it means. And again, it's not, even though it's called Knights, it has nothing to do with the Emerald Knights comics that was along, I forget, like the mid 90s when Parallax comes back and redeems himself and
right.
like, and dies. That has nothing to do with that, because I remember I got excited about it with you and I was like, man, I'm really about this. No, it's an anthology movie, which is,
that makes
like,
it even more impressive to me, because Gotham Knight was such crap and so was Animatrix and stuff like that, that they were able to take five or six different stories and all of them were good.
Because they made sense.
Yep.
They talked about the origins of the Green Lantern Corps. They talked about the Sinestro storyline. They talked about Kilowog, which is a great, great storyline.
Yeah, it is.
Abin Sur doing justice to that and why he meant so much before he died.
You mean like the movie that did an awesome job with Abin Sur?
With the guy who played Boba Fett or Jango Fett? Yeah, sure did. Nathan Fillion
yep.
comes back in the DC Universe. He plays Hal Jordan this time. But he's really not really the focal point of the movie.
Nah, he just kind of narrates, oh, there's the beginning of a story, and then we kind of hit the flashback
mm-hmm.
and go to something else. He's just telling stories to young lanterns.
Yeah, or Elizabeth Moss, who plays Aresia. Sinestro's in it. Kelly Hugh, who... What the hell happened to her after X-Men 2? plays Lara, which is a great character. Henry Rollins, surprisingly, is a really good Kilowog.
Yep.
I know your favorite character, though. Bullfunga!
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
That's right, baby. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Arnold Vosloo is your favorite character, as Abin Sur.
Habib Marwan.
That's right, baby.
Love him, man. No, I agree. I really liked it. It's not my favorite DC Universe movie, only because I've seen Year One.
Yeah, that's the thing. I borrowed the fault right now to you because I have not seen Year One. Everyone Rises is really good. But they finally, to me, they put together so many good stories to explain what the Green Lantern Corps is about, how they originated, the powers, the stuff that they can do. And it just meant so much to see this properly done.
And it came out the week the big the Ryan Reynolds movie came out. And, man, if I had just known, I'd have just watched that one again. God, I'm so disappointed. You have no idea. Yeah, you have an idea.
$80 million on a $300 million budget. Ooh. And they're still going to make the second one.
And they might actually. I pray. Maybe they'll do it right.
Maybe. Maybe they'll just reboot it. How's that?
They could. If they could reboot my brain to make me forget that I ever saw it, that'd be great.
Can they just restart it like the Superman series over and over? Like, we're going to get this right. We swear to God. We're going to get it right.
You're going to get this one right, or you won't get run right ever.
You better not talk to Nick Trail like that.
Nothing like inside jokes on a podcast where nobody gets it.
Pretty much.
Awesome. Indeed. But yeah, Year One is freaking great. I'm a big fan.
You go about that one. Go ahead.
You've read it, right?
Yeah, of course I read it.
So you know the story.
Oh, yeah.
That it's kind of more about Gordon.
Right.
I mean, there's a good bit about Batman also, obviously, but it kind of, it's the origin of why he decides to be Batman. There's pieces of Batman Year One in Batman Begins and things like that, but it is more a story about Gordon. I'm not going to go into the plot lines because it's new and it's something you should probably go out of your way to see, but animation-wise, it's still got a little bit of a Japanese tinge, but not nearly as defined as it's been when it's really done poorly, in my opinion. It's kind of shot in a smoky way. Like, you see the animation, it looks a little smoky at times. I think it's intentional because if you've ever seen that graphic novel, it's done in kind of a Frank Miller noir kind of deal, which, you know, kind of makes sense because Frank Miller wrote it. But it's just really well done. The only question I had, it took me a little bit of time, and I'm not sure if I loved it, but I liked half of it, was Ben McKenzie, who he's on Southland, really like him on Southland. Like him, period. It took me a minute to get used to his Bruce Wayne, and I'm not sure yet that I like his Bruce Wayne, but I like his Batman. So half of it I'm okay with, and I think I could get used to. By the end of it, the Bruce Wayne wouldn't bother me as much. It does sound a little off, but it's not. I don't think it's terrible at all. Cranston is the best Gordon I've ever heard done. Like, it's perfect. It is pitch perfect to me. Really well done. And I thought Elijah Dushku was good, and Katie Sackhoff's in it also, and for some reason I can't remember what she did.
Detective?
Yeah. Sarah Essen? The Affair. She's okay in it. I thought Elijah Dushku was great as Catwoman. Like, that was really cool, but it's certainly a dark, grim tale of kind of the origins of Batman. You get to see the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne, which you've probably seen a million times. Mm-hmm. But it's done pretty well, and it's kind of just done in a situation where he's thinking back on it in his head while he's brooding and trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life and all that kind of stuff. But it's just really well handled. It's not long at all. It's only 64 minutes long, which, you know, that would be disappointing, except I think they told the story. If you've ever seen Year One in terms of the graphic novel or the, you know, the original comics or whatever, it's not long. We're not talking about a long graphic novel at all, so there's not that much meat in it. So they didn't try to overdo it. There's a lot of direct passages and quotes taken directly from the graphic novel that are right there as dialogue, and that stuff's really well done. If you like Year One, you'll definitely like it, but I urge anybody that likes comics to give it a shot. I think it's definitely the best one, and I would say it's that one and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern somewhere right there. I don't know which way I would go. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan, so I might lean there, but I really like Wonder Woman and want to express again that people, even people that don't like Wonder Woman or don't know anything about her, should watch that. You should definitely find that and watch that. But here's the point I was going to bring up that I wanted to wait and see when it would fit. I'll make it here because it would be a good way for us to conclude this. There's one thing that people, or that we even, or that critics may forget when they analyze and scrutinize these DC Universe or Marvel Universe or whatever kind of movies. And that is, they have an inherent disadvantage that something like a Pixar or a DreamWorks doesn't have to deal with. And that is, we, especially the diehard fans, have read these characters, seen these characters on TV forever, understand what we think these characters should be, what these characters should look like, exactly how these stories should be told because we've read them and all this kind of stuff. So in a way, they're having to try and live up to expectations that fanboys and people have placed on them because of the longevity and the breadth of information that's available about these characters, whereas Pixar creates original material that we don't have anything to compare it to. So we're able to just watch it. And for instance, like the voice casting, you know, we rip the voice casting apart in a lot of these things because we think it's poorly done. The question is, would we think it's poorly done if it was Pixar? Because we don't know and don't know what these characters are supposed to sound like. And that's, I mean, there's nothing that can be done about that. But I think that it's harder for these DC Universe pictures, for just as examples, to ever be to the level of a Pixar or DreamWorks or whatever original picture, simply because it's not original and we already have biases and preconceived notions of what this has to be good before we ever watch it. And I think that should always be thought of, because it's hard. It's got to be hard for these people, because a lot of times, you know, even Geoff Johns or Grant Morrison, whoever it is associated with these actual pictures, with these DC Universe movies. And it's still really hard to satisfy big-time comic fans, people in the know, and things like that. I would think that a lot of people that don't read comics would like some of these a lot more than we would.
Yeah.
Because there's the concept of ignorance is bliss. I think it fits here perfectly.
You just pretty much inspired me to watch Batman Year One the minute we were done with this podcast. Let's see. There's three more announced upcoming projects after Year One. The next one soon to come up in 2012 is Justice League Doom, which is based on sort of the Mark Waid series, The Tower of Babel.
Right.
And which basically is Vandal Savage creating the Legion of Doom to take down the Justice League.
Hawk and Animal?
But the good thing about this is I think it would be done well, because it was the book was originally made by Dwayne McDuffie.
Right.
And it was it was adapted by Dwayne Miller, who did All-Star Superman, who wrote All-Star Superman and actually helped write the film. And it's actually also directed by Lauren Montgomery, who's had mostly hits than misses. It's got Kevin Conroy again. It's got Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern again. It's got a lot of good roles. So I think with the veteran cast, this could end up being pretty decent. Again, the thing that scares me is I've never read this series, but I hate Legion of Doom because it's so just cliche. It's just so. Like, it's good for the bad. Huh?
Sorry, I was doing Hawk.
Okay, I hate you. After that, you have Superman versus the Elite, which, from sources are saying, it's supposed to be based on the, I think it was 2001 it was written, the What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way comic. Which is basically, it's a darker take on Superman about basically those bounds and that we were talking about in that line where, what's the point of not killing a villain?
Right.
And that kind of subject. So it kind of takes on that. It's well and done received back when it was sold out a couple years ago. This is the one that you and me both really, The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, God.
Is it supposed to be a two-parter, from what I'm understanding?
It needs to be, because there's so much there.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read The Dark Knight Returns, you should stop this podcast and read it.
If you haven't read The Dark Knight Returns, Jay's going to beat your ass.
With a Louisville Slugger.
Won't be there for you and that guy in San Diego with my name.
I mean, like, people associate, or people that aren't huge comic aficionados, for example, affiliate Frank Miller with Sin City, and that's fine, but I always associate him with Year One and Dark Knight Returns first. Dark Knight Returns is just like so different, and now you can play as Fat Batman in Arkham City.
Leave him alone. Leave him alone.
What were we calling him? Chubbs?
Chubbs McGee? Oh man, that's so awesome.
But yeah, you should definitely watch it.
Let me see. Oh, here's a cool little sale. US sales for all the movies from Doomsday to Batman Year One so far, considering Batman Year One's only been out for, 2 weeks? The total gross in all the movies has been, okay, total units so far sold, 4.7 million total of all the movies combined. Total amount of the movies they all made together, $73 million. That's not shabby.
Not for a bunch of straight to Blu-ray and...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, here's a shot in the dark, and this is how we'll end this game and this podcast. Tell me which one you think made the most money and sold the most units. Bear in mind, we aren't in a recession.
So it's one of the earlier ones, right?
Unfortunately.
It's Doomsday, isn't it?
Yeah. Doomsday sold 683,000 some units, making almost $9.5 million. The worst one is a shame, and I blame Ryan Reynolds, and I just gave it away right there.
It's Emerald Knights, isn't it?
2.8 million selling only 200,000 units. Next to that worst one is the Shorts collection, the one with Black Adam. Yeah, that one, like the 4-part one. Next to that is All-Star Superman, unfortunately. That's a shame.
I hope year one does well, I'll tell you that.
I think it's good to a good boost. I mean, considering it's only been out for 2 weeks, it's sold almost half as much as Emerald Knights, half as much in just 2 weeks, whereas Emerald Knights has been out for, 5 months? So it's on a good pace, I would say.
God, it feels like I saw Green Lantern 10 years ago.
Unfortunately, you did not. You lose.
Man.
Sissy, second best one was, Public Enemies.
Well, that's good.
8.3 million for about 550,000 units. So good for it. I think Doom's going to do okay. I really think the Dark Knight Return is going to be huge.
Especially if it times right.
If it times with
Dark Knight Rises, look out.
Mm-hmm. Because it's going to make money like Gotham Knight. Which
what
unfortunately
probably deserved.
Exactly. Gotham Knight unfortunately sold almost 400,000 units for $8.1 million.
Oh, God. Oh.
Joey.
Oh, my God. Why?
Joey? I don't know.
The thing is, I would have bought it, but I actually was able to obtain a copy early just to sample it. And I was going to be like, all right, as long as it's good, I'm going to buy it. And it wasn't.
Nope.
But I somehow own it now. Thanks to Batman Arkham City Collector's Edition.
Yeah, that was not a good hidden gem in that whole little case.
Give me Public Enemies or Under the Red Hood or Year One or.
Speaking of the Batman Arkham City, I'm thinking about letting Kristen chop up the box so I can frame the images of the Joker, Two-Face, and Batman that are on the side.
Can't do that because I know that I've already got like high quality images of them saved on my computer, which could easily be converted digitally to good pictures later on.
Okay, that might seem like a better idea.
I want to keep the box where it is because it's just, God.
Yeah, it's quite swanky.
It's the sexiest thing I've seen without bra and panties in a long time.
What if you put bra and panties on it?
I thought about it. I don't think it would work as well.
That's disgusting. All right, on that note, let's just wrap it up there. This has been another edition of Certifiable Total Recall. My name is, again, Andrew Van. You can follow me on Facebook at avan360. Also at Twitter on avan360. Don't bother looking at my Google Plus because I forgot about that shit.
What's funny is so did I. I was like, man, that was going to be the next big thing. And apparently a lot of people use it. I just don't.
You were really big on like that first month, man.
For a week, this is way better.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this is kind of cool, but I just don't think about it. I'm just whatever. Maybe I'm out of the loop at this point. But I am Jason Martin at jmart100 at Facebook and at Twitter. Obviously, you can find the show by searching Certifiable Total Recall on Facebook. You can also tweet the show or follow the show at CTR Podcast or email us ctrpod@gmail.com. Anything you're getting into this week that needs a quick mention?
Let's see. We got Wake Forest and Clemson for their last ACC. No, I'm sorry, not last, but the last Clemson home game, because after that, they're going to NC State next week.
Beat down coming to Clemson.
Excuse me?
We shut out the Tar Heels.
Yeah, Russell Wilson's going to sure shut them up. Oh, wait.
Mike Glennon is not the reason we've been losing football games, though.
Hey, I'm not saying that.
Mike Glennon's actually been pretty decent. It's just the team it's around him's not all that special. Now, you guys should probably drop about 60 on us.
Should, but we'll see. I don't ever say anything on ACC games. They're always good ones, decently. But, yeah, so we got that going on. What else comes out this week? Skyrim comes out.
Yep.
It's going to take some time to get used to. What else comes out this week?
Harry Potter.
Yep, unfortunately, sure does. The scantily clad box set. What else comes out this week, movie stuff wise?
J. Edgar comes out Friday, which I already mentioned. I will be watching. I will see. I just ordered Pawnee, the book that Leslie Knope wrote on the show, which has actually been released. I ordered that on Amazon a little while ago. It's 256 pages. I saw like a couple people on TV like opening and showing it off. It's got like the Ron Swanson Pyramid of Greatness and all this stuff. It's got sections written by each of the characters in character. And also, it's getting, like, rave reviews, so I'm all kind of jacked up to get that and get some laughs out of some more Parks and Rec material. Tomorrow, by this point, you will have either heard it or not heard it, I guess, because this won't be up probably until Wednesday, but I will be on 6 p.m. with Jeremy Brown, 6 p.m. Central Time, Red Zone. We'll be talking Tops football, swimming, volleyball, the start of the college basketball season, as well as some BCS, because, boy, it's interesting stuff coming out after the Alabama 2-point loss. 3-point loss. Yeah, 3-point loss. But so that's what's going on. That's pretty good. And again, I tell you, watch New Girl, give Once Upon a Time and Grimm a shot. They're both pretty decent shows also. That, I think, covers it. Eventually, we're going to have to do an Arkham City podcast, but we're both going to have to actually finish the game first.
Yeah, I need some time on that.
Yeah.
But that would probably happen after I watched year one today. But again, we have reintroduced ourselves. You know how to find us. Stalk us. Please do. Ladies, Jason's single. You can find him. Send him nudie pictures. And again, if you don't want to send him nudie pictures, you send him to Richard's Comics. Richard Morgan loves nudies, ladies.
Richard, by the way, has posted in, over the last couple of weeks his enjoyment of Once Upon a Time as well. So if you need somebody else's opinion to back up mine, there it is.
Yeah. You can find him at ramorgan@ix.netcom.com, ladies. Or gentlemen, whatever. Anyway, again, I am Andrew Van of the CTR, Certified Total Recall Podcast. One half of the Moops with my buddy.
Oh, you want me to say it? I am Jason Martin, still in Bowling Green, Kentucky. We are signing off. This has been another spectacular, whatever week of Certifiable Total Recall. Hope you enjoyed this memory trip down the DC Universe lane. And as always, like we always do about this time, Andrew, take us home.
We out!